Talk. I'm delighted because I've got the folks from New Haven Theater Company on. Is it just you, Gavin? How you doing?
I think it's just me for now. I'm doing great. Thanks. How are you doing?
I'm good. Listen, I think today's going to be a terrific day. It's not going to rain. It's going to be warm.
Oh, it's gorgeous out right now.
Oh, I can't wait to get out in these streets.
Absolutely.
All right. So tell me about this play. I went to my very first New Haven Theater Company play. For the last one, Cry It Out.
Cry It Out. I unfortunately didn't get to see that.
It was so good, but I love this little mighty theater company.
Oh, absolutely. It's really been a privilege to get to work with them. It's such a wonderful group of people. And for this production, we actually held open auditions for several roles, which isn't, as I understand, the norm. So I'm really grateful to have been able to kind of get seen by them and to be able to be a part of this work. It's really been fabulous.
So you're in the play. You're playing Nick.
Yes, I am. I'm playing Nick. He's one of the lexicographers at Webster's Dictionary. Can I ask before we go on, what sort of language can I use? Because it's relevant for this play.
Oh, Webster's bitch.
Webster's bitch. Yes, absolutely. We just want to preface that before I get into that. Oh, yes,
please. I was talking about it in my first set because I love this language, right?
So. Oh, absolutely.
So any chance that I get to talk that way, I'm like, oh, I'm so in. So anyway, this particular play is about these folks work for Webster's Dictionary. Is that
yes.
It?
Absolutely. A bunch of huge nerds who are lexicographers at Webster's Dictionary. And it's all about the fallout from the editor-in-chief of the dictionary being recorded and posted to the internet calling one of the other employees a bitch. And so it's all about the inter-office politics. It's about defining, how we define words and the cultural context and what's the responsibility of the dictionary in really, presenting this information to the people, and are we allowed to describe and like prescribe what how these words are used? Do we just report on how people are using them? And then it's also about misogyny in the workplace. It's about age and power imbalances and the inter-office politics.
I'm sorry, is this scandal? What is happening here? Is this scandal? Like, this sounds like made for television drama. Hey, Abby Klein and J. Kevin Smith, welcome to Love Babs Love Talk. So I was just having a conversation with Gavin about the play and its relevance to this particular moment. So when you decided to say yes to this production, and Abby, are you in the play? Kevin, you're in the play. Y'all are all actors in the play.
Actually, I am not. Babs, I am doing the marketing for the show, and I'm the president of the company. I was originally scheduled to be in the show, but some personal issues got in the way. And so as a result, I turned that role over to one of the members of the company who is doing an outstanding job with the role and doing it, Babs, way better than I could ever have done it. So it's always good to have, good folks who can step in and make the company look great. But Ralph Brunecore is the one who is playing the role of Frank now.
Okay.
They opened this Thursday.
Yes. That's why we're talking, because y'all are about to, John Watson, this is going to be about to be a party. So Abby, what's your role in this play? Unmute yourself. Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I play Gwen, who is a lexicographer also, like Nick, at Webster's, and I've been there 8 years. And I'm, I would say, uptight and very focused on perfection. And I have a bit of a problem with authority. And I really am passionate about words. I have a history of studying medieval literature, and I'm kind of snotty about it. But She's, you know, she's very vulnerable and not very confident, but also knows that she's got something, but she's not, you know, good at putting it forward. So
welcome, John Watson. So would y'all say that this play is timely? Like, do you feel like this play represents a moment now, or is this a Mad Men kind of vibe, or do you know what I mean? Or is it in the future? Or like, where are we with language in these kinds of spaces?
I'd say this is absolutely extraordinarily timely. I'm even in the play, it is, I think, set in 2019, I want to say. Okay. And so it's very much dealing with the kind of, you know, it's not necessarily dealing with COVID, not that timely, but very much is, you know, situated in a very present feeling moment, and very much is, you know, engaging with what is, how do we engage with the internet? What is the role there? What are the, you know, what are the ways that can help us a lot? What are the pitfalls of that? You know, when you're trying to have discussions about complicated topics, how does it, you know, bring things to light, but then also kind of obscure where we might be able to have more nuance in conversations.
So when you talk about nuance in conversation, when you use, like, I guess, colorful language, does it help? Or and while you're doing this work, while you're putting on this play, do you learn to think differently about this language, right? Because we all, I mean, everybody has a curse word or two that's their go-to. Do you hear language differently from doing this?
I would say that I do, yes. I think that it's very much, you know, it, in working with this play and trying to get into the heads of, you know, people whose job it is to think about words all day long, every day, and what they mean and what are the consequences of them, I think it's definitely helped me to, you know, in my own life, be more thoughtful about, like, what words am I using? How am I using them? What are the connotations of them that I'm not necessarily thinking about, but all this sort of, like, interconnected web. I think Abby's character, Gwen, describes it as a made-up human puzzle at one point in the play, which I think is really apt.
So John, tell me what your role is these days in this play. What are you up to in this play? You have to unmute yourself.
Hang on.
Okay.
There you go.
All right. Well, I am one of the two co-directors of this show. Mm-hmm. I think it's enormously complicated. Both the very timely stuff and the sort of eternal stuff about language are enormously important here. Many of us, when we're growing up, wonder about the language and the who decides what something means and how appropriate or inappropriate it may be. And this really looks at that question, among others, of the what some people would call cancel culture these days.
Mm.
So I think it's a fascinating. It develops eternally new subsets and subjects. And I love the relationships here and things like office politics, which we don't ordinarily think about, but get discussed very openly here. Fascinating play to me. And I love the jobs that everybody's doing and love working with them.
Yeah, Babs, there's also a lot of gender.
I was just scared to ask that. I was just about to ask that question about gender, because gender is prevalent with us so much right now.
Yeah, and it kind of predates the Me Too movement in terms of the when the play was written. And it doesn't really have the kind of Me Too connotations the way that a lot of the things played out during the Me Too movement. But it certainly is a stepchild of that era, of that Me Too movement. Because there is a definite gender basis for not only the politics that are happening within the dictionary in the office, but even in the use of foul language. There's a scene that where Abby and Gavin are talking about the role of pejorative female terms in you know, foul language, and how that's something that, you know, what's up with that? Why is that the case? And it's a great scene. So I'm looking forward to the audience getting a chance to get that planted in their head a little bit and take it away from them and talk about it, you know, long after they left the theater.
I find it interesting that, you know, this play is set in a work in an office of a dictionary company, and this talking about language and colorful language and foul language, and then you throw in, you know, language against that women are called. Like, how does that a deliberate to help us see words, because this is not set in a coffee shop. So does it feel intentional that it's in a place where words is the business?
I think it's very intentional. I think it's her intention to think and direct our attention to the fact that the words you choose to use are enormously important, and they are related to all kinds of social issues that you never think about them as being related to. Joyce, for instance, the second in command, the woman who's the subject of the insult that sort of is the plot driver of the thing, has this slightly tipsy speech in which she recalls what it was like when she started there 30 odd years before, and how incredibly overtly, by modern standards, it was sexist in the way she was treated as a woman newly empowered or joining that world, and how the man who is now revered as a great founder of the lexicographic movement was incredibly sexist in the way he spoke to this young woman when she was starting out. It's fascinating stuff, and it's very, I think, very intentional on Bircher's part.
Sure. Mm. And so doing this play, the audience will see it for the first time in a couple of days. What do you hope that they get from it? And is there a overarching message that you want people to walk away with?
Easy message or a simple message. I think the play ends unresolved about what's going to happen as a consequence of the gaffe that, it, again, is the plot driver. I don't think they want you to walk away saying, oh, well, we've thought that out and we know exactly what to think about it and what to do about it. I think they want to start you thinking, or Bertrand wants to start you thinking, both about the fascinating business of defining words and about the incredible impact of words on our thinking that we're not even aware of.
Mm-hmm. And so when you bring this cast of characters together for a play such as this, right, talk a little bit about what the beginnings look like. How do people find their way into what they believe this character in this play is saying? Talk a little bit about the experience.
Good question for the actors, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess for me, it was selfishly a very easy role in some ways, because I identify a great deal with my character. You know, as I said before, she's kind of timid, she's kind of reserved, but she's also can be very outspoken because she holds so much in so much of the time. I think there are these moments where she's just lets it all out, and it's not very controlled, and it's often to her detriment. And so I think I just allowing myself and trying to force myself to be as vulnerable as I can and kind of tune into some of those feelings that I share in common with the character. That's where I got started anyway. And also I love words. I'm a, you know, kind of a word nerd too. And so that was an easy match too for me. And just to go back to your last question real quickly, I think there's a scene, a great scene in which the woman who plays my sister in the show tells me, she's comforting me and kind of giving me advice and encouragement, and says, you can make choices. You know, there are other ways you can make people listen to you. And just thinking about the subtle ways and the subtle choices that we can make in our own lives, maybe to be able to make changes slowly but surely and societally as well. I think that's an interesting message to try to take away from this.
And Abby, does it hit different because you're a woman? Like, if a woman tells you that, what do you hear? Because women are often told to be quiet, to stand back, don't shine too bright, you know, don't be, you know, all these things. Does it hit differently?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to me that in this play, my character is at odds pretty much all the time with my direct supervisor, who is a woman, and I favor and have the favor of the editor-in-chief, who is a man, and yet I'm fighting against Nick, Gavin's character, who is a man also, and I think it bothers the character more to hear that advice and that, you know, sort of slightly being talked down to by Joyce than it does by Frank. And that's an interesting statement, just about women in the workplace in general, I think, and probably particularly about my character and her history and all that.
Gavin?
Yes. Well, I would say in terms of inhabiting the character, for me, it's always wonderful to work with a script like this one that Jacqueline Bircher has written, that is just so wonderfully dense. Even, you know, during our rehearsal that we had last night, I was still finding new connections with this character. And so it's really a privilege to get to work with such a great script and with other such great actors. I feel like a lot of the process is just, you know, digging into it and launching myself into rehearsals and really just finding the character from there on your feet. And so it tends to be very different for every script because, you know, every playwright has, you know, a vastly different writing style.
So John, when you take on the task to direct, what's your first thought? You gather these folks together. This is a play written by a woman. Do you tap into your inner femininity? Do you tap into your, you know, like, where do you have to go to sort of make sure that you get the best out of these actors for this particular production?
Well, it's fairly complicated, but it's not as complicated as I at first want to make it. One of the things that has helped me a great deal is to talk to women who have read this play and who have looked at this play from the outside. I've been married to a feminist attorney for almost 60 years, and so I listen to her about these issues. Also, the one who brought this play to us, Susan Culp, who sadly is not able to be involved in the production, has talked to me a bit about it. But also, I look at the script and I find stuff there. When I start out, I think about, okay, who are these people? How are they different? Why is Gwen one way and her sister another? And, you know, what's the complexity, if any, about a gay male being involved in these conversations, which is the other male character in this show. And for me, the rehearsal process, as much as it is for an actor, is discovering steadily as I go along more and more and more in the script about, for instance, Gwen is at odds with her immediate supervisor, Joyce, and perceives the editor-in-chief as her ally. But we learn somewhere along the line that, after all, Joyce is really just following orders from her boss, and that he is the one who made those decisions that she is getting blamed for. It's a process like any other, and I love it.
So Kevin, you're working on the marketing of this play. What do you tell people? Like, how do you tell people that this is a play about language and words and bad words at that, or foul words at that, in an office setting? And yeah. Oh yeah, the internet.
right. You know, one of the things that Jacqueline Bircher gives us as kind of grounding for the play is some language that she uses to describe the play. And I think that, you know, you always need to start with what the playwright says about their work as a way to tell other people about it. And she has one of the great taglines that I've seen about a play, which is that Webster's Bitch is a play about vulgar words and the people who define them. And I think that really encapsulates a lot of what the play is about, right? And so we used that throughout the marketing campaign to make sure that, you know, people understood going in that this was one, we didn't shy away from the title of the play. There are some people who have produced this play in the past who have basically kind of obscured the word bitch in the title because they didn't want to put that word out there. Well, we didn't run away from it because the play doesn't run away from it. And so we wanted to make sure people understood that there are vulgarities in it. And we also have a very, very concise synopsis of the play that I think really gets across what's happening, where it's located, what the dynamics are in terms of the people. And then frankly, you know, we just came off of a very, very successful run of Cry It Out. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to make sure that people didn't get left behind and not being able to get tickets for the show. So, you know, we let people know, if you know, don't miss out on this. We just finished this great run. This is going to be a great run as well. And we have, I think, one single ticket left, Babs, for Saturday night. And so if you still want to come see the show on Saturday night, the 17th, 18th, we have one more ticket.
Check my calendar. I saw that because when I was on your website, I was like, sold out. So I was like, well, how can people come see this? It's sold out. I don't know. Are you going to add another show or can
Lots
you add
of folks
another
gonna
show?
Come see it. That's the great thing.
That is a great thing. So actors, talk to me about what it means to be a working actor right now. Like, what is that like? Gavin, Abby.
Well, for me, I'm very much towards the beginning of my career. I think I graduated from undergrad in the middle of the pandemic. And so for me, it's very much been a process of just kind of finding opportunities where I can. I've been super grateful to get to work here in New Haven. I've been able to go down to New York a little bit and perform down there. But it's very much been, you know, piecemeal, you know, I'll take work where I can get it. But mm-hmm. it's really been so wonderful to have the resources here to be able to do this kind of work at the quality that we're able to do it, which really is phenomenal.
Hmm.
Not to toot our own horn too much.
No, you should.
I'm a bit older than Gavin, but I also am just starting out, and I'm really thrilled to have this opportunity as one of my first in a very long time. Acting is something that I loved for years and did not get a chance to do much of. I was living abroad in a country that is not English speaking. And so I didn't speak French well enough to be able to act in French. So here we are. And I'm just thrilled. Like Gavin said, same, I'll just echo that. This is a really wonderful company. And I got a couple of invitations into it from two people who I admire and respect very much, and I'm very grateful to John for giving me this opportunity, and I'm excited for hopefully more in the future.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So Kevin and John, you know, the American theater is changing a great deal. You know, I think the pandemic has really sort of changed how we want to be in community and theaters with people. You know, theaters are, you know, shows are coming to Broadway. They're not staying for months, weeks. They're staying for a couple of weeks and then move on to something else. And then, you know, smaller theaters are finding their rhythm. What do you make of where the American theater is gonna find itself in the next few years?
Well, I think it's flying off in all directions. I think it's fascinating to watch. I mean, this company, for example, is a certain kind of company. We do little shows, we do serious shows, we don't do fluff. Coming out of the pandemic, there were some people who were saying, well, essentially everybody just wants to be entertained, so do light stuff, fun stuff. But we found that very serious stuff plays like a house of fire. So I think other companies are doing very different stuff and they're succeeding too. It's really cool to look at it. A time when a few years back, people constantly talked about the death of the American theater, and surprise, ain't dead yet.
But I would say that, you know, the things that you know, Bab, that you talk, Babs, that you're talking about is the way that many theaters, especially nonprofit institutional theaters, have seen a retrenchment in the work that they are doing because they're seeing either, you know, net drop-offs in the number of people who want to come to the theater. People people talk about a lot of the different reasons why, whether it be streaming services being, you know, having entertainment available at your fingertips, or whether it was, you know, people concerned about going out because of the kind of the COVID hangover for theater, whether it was in the case of New York City with, you know, the tourism industry there, which drove a good bit of the Broadway and commercial theater world, still not back where it was pre-COVID. And as a result, seeing declines in Broadway houses as a result of that. I think there are a lot of things that are combining to make it a really challenging time for a lot of theaters. A lot of theaters are finding that the old subscription model that has been the mainstay of the institutional nonprofit theater isn't really working for them anymore, because people don't want to necessarily choose all five shows or whatever the number is and tickets for them all. They want a more flexible approach. We at New American Theater Company have never had a subscription model. We never wanted to do that. We never wanted to take our theater in that direction. So we're not seeing some of those same structural problems. And also where many theaters are seeing double digit declines in attendance, we're actually coming up on the heels of two of the most well-attended shows that we have ever had as a company. Cry It Out was our second most attended show in the history of the company. Webster's Bitch is gonna end up being very close behind that as a result of the fact that it's now sold out. So we've been lucky, but we also worked really hard to figure out what our voice is. And John talked a little bit about that. I think our voice is one of the things that has had people come back to us over and over again.
Mm-hmm. So Gavin and Abby, the New Haven Theater Company is a very intimate theater experience. I mean, do you like that? Do you like folks are like right there, like they're right there with you. They're on stage with you. Do you like that effect?
Ask me on Thursday night. I don't know. I find it terrifying, but also really exciting. I did this a production of The Crucible in high school, which was, I know it was high school, but it was amazing because instead of being in the big auditorium where we normally would have been, the whole audience was on the stage with us in just a semicircle and surrounding us. It's super close and intimate. And yeah, there was this energy that would not have been there otherwise. So I expect that this is going to be somewhat like that, that hopefully we'll feed off them and it will be positive and not, you know, we'll hear them gossiping about us not so quietly from right there. We'll see.
Absolutely. I for one, I love getting to work in really intimate spaces like this. I would say, as opposed to, you know, your large proscenium stage where there's a whole lot of separation between the actors and the audience. I feel like there's a place for that, and there's great stuff that is put on there. But as an actor, somewhat selfishly, I feel like I love to have the intimate connection with the audience. It feels, to me at least, that that's really what kind of sets theater apart from, say, film, as a, you know, a medium of art. I really like the way that it really feels like a dialogue, and it really, you know, elevates the kind of the feeling that every single night is different, and you know, you really have like individual people out there that you are immediately sharing your art with, and that's really rewarding to me. That's you know, that's the kind of thing there's a high that comes with that I just love, and that's why I keep coming back to acting.
And this is the last production of your season, correct, Kevin and John?
That's correct.
Yep.
And so how many shows do you do a season, two or three?
We typically do three shows. I'm sorry, go ahead, John.
I said we do three shows. Sometimes there's a fourth event of some kind, a reading or whatever, but regularly three shows.
Okay. So you finished, this is your last show for the season. And then when do you go right into reading more plays and look for next seasons? Like, how does that work?
Well, we usually give ourselves a little bit of a break from the last show and then get together again in the middle of June to start thinking about what our next season's going to be. You know, a lot of theaters like to put out their season well ahead of time so they can sell subscriptions and all the stuff that goes with that, right? Are not under that same kind of a pressure. We will spend this summer reading scripts and talking to each other about the things that interest us. We're already starting to do that a little bit. We're really interested in doing something in and around the October timeframe. this year, which is a little earlier than we would normally do. You know, there is going to be a lot happening in the fall. And so we want to be there and give New Haven audiences something to think and talk about as they consider, you know, what they're going to be doing in the fall. And so I think it's, we'll probably be in a position, as we normally are, to announce our season sometime around the beginning of September, end of August.
Okay. So Webster's Bitch, written by Jacqueline Bircher and co-directed by Margaret Mann and John Watson, launches May 9th. And it will run from May 9th, the 16th, the 10th, the 11th, the 17th, and the 18th. Tickets are $20. And if you're lucky, you might be able to, if you're listening, whoever's listening, you might be able to get that last ticket for the last show.
Although there's one left.
I might have to wrestle that for somebody. I might have to wrestle that. But...
you may also request to be put on the waiting list in case of a cancellation or whatever.
and it's where are y'all? 839 Chapel Street in the English Building Market, which is a lovely space. I had no idea that this space was so deep and big. You know, you're shopping, then you're like, oh, look, a theater. So it's great. It's great.
The best theater lobby in Connecticut.
Best theater lobby in Connecticut. And you can buy wine if you want a glass of wine, which is really nice. Right. So Abby Klein and Gavin Whelan, good luck. Break a leg. I know that this will be, I think you will enjoy this theater and this performance. And the audiences that come to this theater, it's lovely to see you, Kevin and John. And I am cheering for the New Haven Theater Company. I am cheering. So I can't wait to see what y'all do next. So enjoy the show. And thank you all for coming on this morning.
Thanks so much, Bess.
Thank you. Thank you.
Webster's Bitch. You know, I'm going to say it as much as I can now because it's the title of the play. Thank you all so much. Enjoy today and have a good opening.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Right. Take good care. All right, Harry, we are on our way out, but I'll be back tomorrow. And I hope you all get out there and enjoy the 75-degree, 80-degree weather because it's going to rain after that. But get out here and enjoy the sun. Get your vitamin D. And enjoy the city while it's and the cherry blossoms are still blossoming. They're still on the trees. So go and be in the city. And I'll be back tomorrow. I think I have who do I have tomorrow? Tomorrow I have Sonia De Los Santos, who is doing something at the Schwarzman Center, which I'm excited about. And Collective Consciousness Theater. It's my guest tomorrow at 10:15. So it's theater day. The next couple of days are theater days. So I will see y'all. Have a good one. Take good care. Ooh.